This is KWAI, Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.
You know that Ross's Appliances and Furniture is the leading appliance and furniture recycler in Hawaii. Ross's has been producing quality new and renewed appliances for decades. Ross's now debuts their new Green Bed Factory, Hawaii's environmentally conscious mattress and box spring factory. You can save your budget, your back, and the planet all at the same time at Ross's. Go green, save green at Ross's Big Green Building. Check it out for yourself. Ross's will save you hundreds of dollars, and they guarantee it.
Welcome to the Carol Cox Show. Thought I'd give us a little taste of a little positive thinking and a little bit of why we all should look, no matter what problems we got and what problems we'll get. It'll always be better the next day or the next moment. So who cares? Let's just do good and feel good. Anyway, I have a guest today, and he's Al Bento, a friend who's become a friend of mine, and I really appreciate what I've learned and some of the things he shared with me as far as fishing and just history about Hawaii and all of the good things about Hawaii. And not being born and raised here, I'm always interested in knowing what used to be and why is it this way now. So anyway, I'm going to bring him on shortly, but I wanted to just touch on one or two things real quickly. At the Pearl Peninsula Navy Station, you may have read that there was a submarine that caught fire. The fact of the matter is that the Navy refused or tried to actually cloak that in quiet and secrecy until the community members in that surrounding area became concerned, because there was a loud explosion and a ball of fire and orange glow and what have you. Yet the Navy didn't feel necessary to say anything or inform the public if they were safe, if they had to worry about anything, if there's any contaminants or release. And believe it or not, they're still cleaning that up. And only due to the prompting and querying by myself here and the community in asking the Navy. They didn't volunteer anything. So you did see something in the news, but it was only at the prodding and urging of myself and some of the community members. So one thumbs down for the Navy on that one. If you want to be a good community member and protect our INA and protect our rights and all of that, then keep in mind we are American citizens and you have an obligation to protect us abroad and here locally. So anyway, again, speaking of the military, just yesterday visited the Bellows military base or recreation area at Waimanalo. And there's some hanky-panky going on out there. They're cleaning up a landfill that is an old military landfill, and unbeknownst to me, they're taking the materials from the landfill at Bellows and then plopping it down in Nanakuli in the PVT landfill. So hopefully we'll be getting back to you with that information. And it's just wrong. And so out there, if you're listening, military and those folks, you need to treat us good across the board, not just when you need something or when you think it's good for you. You need to treat this community and all communities with respect. But anyway, having said all that, I will be following up on many other things, but those are two issues. And unfortunately, our local media is trying to cover, but if the Navy don't speak, then nothing gets told. So hopefully you'll hear it here. Anyway, good morning, Al, and thank you for joining in with me. And didn't mean to put that song before you, but I'm a believer, brother. So,
good morning, Carol.
How are you?
Very good. Very good.
I just want to let everybody know, if you want to call in, 524-1080, and Al's going to be telling us about his experience in fishing and some of the history, as I've said. And Al has a vessel, the Aleli 2, and Al has been around for some while, and I mean, just the amount of information and what he knows, folks, it is a talking book. It's just so, I enjoy sitting and talking to him. And if you want to, there's a story on carolcox.com, that's C-A-R-R-O-L-L, cox.com. And you can read about Al. It's we title it, Al Bento Got the Blues. So if you're interested in, you can go there and find out what Bento's blues are all about. Okay, Al, how are you?
Very well, Carol. And to bring you up to speed with me, I was born in Maui and came here when I was a young boy with my father, who worked for the gas company. And we had a little beach house out in Cavella Bay, which was very far away from the local vicinity of town. And there was a little island out there called Scorpion Island, and I was fortunate to grow up with, I don't know if most of you people know the Moncrief boys, Bobby Moncrief, David Moncrief, Kimo Moncrief. Bobby turned into be a oceanographer, and Kimo a Hawaiian airline pilot, and David worked for the Hawaiian Electric Company as an engineer. And we had a little beach house out there, and outside of Scorpion Island, that's when I got my first taste of love for the ocean. From there, it proceeded to me owning boats. My first boat was a 14-foot, I don't know if you have, guys know of a P-14. Yeah, a little 33-horsepower Johnson engine on it, and I I roamed the Kahuku Coast with that little boat.
Mm-hmm.
A little crazy now and then, you know, but came in with fish, and that was it. Then I bought a little 23-foot home-built plyglass boat called the Hinalea, which was moored at the anchorage. I don't know how many people remember the anchorage where Sherry Dowsett owned the anchorage. Then I upgraded to a 36-foot sampan called Malia Kai. And that's really what started me into both bottom fishing, basically with bottom fishing and then trolling. After that, 31-foot Uniflight called the Primo, and a 19-foot 7-inch Burgundy Express that I built, a semi-radin that I took from here to Kona and back. Lived in Molokai for a couple of years and did all the tournaments in Maui. A Lahaina jackpot tournament with Burgundy. Had a little fun with that boat. And then finally got into a Lely 2, which I've owned since 1989.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a brief rundown of me getting into it. But bottom fishing was kind of a real interesting thing for me.
So when you bottom fishing, you were doing commercial fishing as well as recreational when you did bottom?
Right, right. And the reason why is I was taught by some of the old-time bottom fishermen, which my boat happened to be right in the middle of these several fishermen that were really top-notch bottom fishermen. I don't know if you guys remember Makaho'okala. He had the Lady Kaneala. We had Boss Ricky Caruso on the Caruso Maru, Ray on the Penny Al, Alcha, Charlie. Yeah, George Inamura on the Mary Eye, Scotty Cherry on the Linnell. They provided me with a lot of teachings on how to tie the hook in order to get the hook in the upper jaw of the onaga or mm-hmm. fish, how to cut the bait so that the bait would, when the fish ate it, the hook would go in the upper jaw, how to chop the palo or chum so that you wouldn't attract too many sharks. So all of those teachings came up from these guys, and I was fortunate enough to be around them.
And you were fortunate to learn that. And at that time, this community was truly a fishing community, right? Mm-hmm. In the old days,
the reason why the old time fishermen did pretty well was because when we went out, we didn't go out for 1 or 2 days like the people of today, the fishermen of today. We went out for 5-6 days and left early on a Friday and came back on a Tuesday. Fishing was good. We'd stay another day if we had enough ice. So our fishermen of today go out for 1, maybe 2 days and have to get back to work or whatever. Most of the time fishing nowadays is a supplemental income to their regular income. So
mm-hmm.
in those days we fished hard and mm-hmm. and did very good.
So what do you think about the population? There's been rules recently about you know, closure and what have you. And what's your opinion and what do you share with the public as relating to that?
Well, I mean, the closures of areas are always good. It restocks areas. I remember when way back when they brought the ta'api in as a measure of curbing some type of coral or whatever. And the ta'api ate all of the onaga and paka-paka eggs and everything, and for a long while we were short on our paka-paka stocks and onaga stocks. But it's coming back, and the thing is, I think today there's still good fishing out there.
So the ta'api, you think, has had some impact on the population, or even the young?
Way back.
I see.
I'm talking about in the 70s.
I see.
And I think it's grown back to the point where we still have fairly decent stocks. The thing about it is fishermen aren't targeting fish in a long sense. Like, they'll go for one day, and with the machines that we have, the electronics we have nowadays, they'll spot a school and they'll fish it. And then they'll leave that area and go to another area, and leave that area and go to another area. Well, mm-hmm. in our days, what we did was we anchored at one spot that we knew had fish,
mm-hmm.
and put out our chum, created a chum line, and stayed there for 2 and 3 days, or 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
And by creating a longer chum line, your fish eventually get back to you. First day, mm-hmm. you may catch 6 or 8. second day, maybe 10. The third day, you're catching 40, 50 pieces. And, you know, just goes on and on as long as you fish the area hard. So we don't have that type of intense fishing from our fishermen nowadays. We have very few fishermen that go out for long periods of time. And everybody, like I say, with the cost of the economy nowadays, the fuel and the ice, everything adds up to a point where shorter trips are being had.
Yeah, last week we talked, and some of the fishermen are actually concerned that they'd go out a little more often, but the problem is they're competing with the imported fish. You know, so they're getting it from all sides, and there are people, you know, some say, well, we shouldn't be fishing at all, but we have to be realistic. I'm an environmentalist. I'm concerned with it, but I have to stand back and say, we all have a right. I'd like to see it being used wisely, but I can't demand that it be stopped completely. And because there are people that have the right to eat fish and do whatever it is they wish, but, you know, so...
Well, I don't think we have that many full-time bottom fishermen to fill the needs of Hawaii, and that's probably where this other market is coming in. They claim it's the same fish and everything, but, you know, fish around the Hawaiian Islands are the best.
Yeah, it's fresh and it's best.
I fish from South Point to the end of Ni'ihau and Middle Bank, Nakanoshi, and all those areas. And there's some fine fishing grounds in all of those areas that are not being touched today.
Now, are these areas in the closed areas?
Some of them are in the closed areas, and some of them are not. But it's getting tougher to spend the time out in the ocean like we did before.
Because it's a big investment for fishermen now. The way I see it, you come out better going to Vegas weekly. Yeah, because let's face it, you take your gas money, you got to load it up with gas, price of gas, you got to get your ice, then you got to get the food, right?
Yeah.
And then you got to invest the time.
Either that or just a bag of rice, and then you eat some of the fish you can.
Well, yeah,
that's what we did.
But if you keep that up for a while, you'll end up growing fins and flippers. but it is a gamble, and so maybe that's curving. But anyway.
Well, when I started bottom fishing, you know, fuel was 11 cents a gallon. And ice was half a penny.
Was this Lincoln? Was he a boy at the same? How old did you say you were? It was 11 cents a gallon.
I've been fishing from 50 years. I'm 68 years old. So,
my
goodness. Even before then.
No wonder you know so much. I'm thinking you had me sniffing here. I thought you were. So 11 cents a gallon.
Yep.
My God.
And I have friends that remember when it was cheaper.
Okay. All right. Well, anyway, I'm sure that you got others out there. But if you want to call in, 524-1080, talking with Al Bento. This is the Carol Cox Show. You, Al, something unique about you, off the subject of commercial fishing and still with fishing. You have a unique situation that you've probably one of the few people can claim this. You, what they call the grander, you caught a large marlin by. Yeah, you caught a large marlin.
Yes.
And you, how big was this marlin?
Well, 1994, May 11th of 1994, on the backside of Molokai, which is one of my real favorite spots to fish, Oscar buoy, weather buoy. Weather buoy's not there anymore, but I was on the second day after I had refurbished my boat, Alele 2, at Alawai Marine. I spent a couple of months in dry dock, and this was my first trip out. Just my friend and I, Frenchie, looked out. Myself went out, and we spent the day on the banks, and then the second day we went up to Kalapapa, and caught quite a few fish in the box, and as we're coming home, just leaving Oscar Buoy, that's when she hit about 1:30 in the afternoon. And she put on a heck of a fight, 3 hours and 35 minutes. And we were in 6 foot, 8 foot seas, 25, 30 knot winds. And the fish died on us, and it went down and down and down and down. And I had a 130 international. I still have it today. It still runs really good.
Mm-hmm.
Penn International 130H.
That's the reel you caught it on.
That's the reel I caught it on.
Yeah.
And I had just I have an old lure called Old Blue, which a lot of fishermen in the state have. And I made a same mold, but I made this with it, a new dichroic glass, and I called it the Silver Fox. Well, it took the Silver Fox and proceeded to fight it. And as it got down and died, it kept on taking, because of the weight of the fish, it kept on taking line down and down and down. Well, in the old days, I got taught by Scotty Cherry's son, Greg Cherry, and I were very close and fished on Lavelle quite a bit. And he had a friend up in the Big Island named Johnny Hano. And I learned a method from Johnny about how to bring up a fish from the deep when it's dead. And the way you do it is you find which way the current is running. As the current's running one way, you go down current, try and stop the fish as best you can, but go down current, and the wings act like ailerons. It starts lifting the fish. And the minute it starts lifting the fish, you turn back up current, and making sure that the line is real tight, you actually give the fish some elevation, and it starts planing its way up to the surface. And I think I must have backed down 200 or 300 times, just picking up 6 inches of line, 2 inches of line, sometimes no line at all. And the main thing is, all your gear has to be just perfect. Not one nick in the line. The leaders have to be tied right. The hooks are on good. And that's the only way you're going to plane one of these monsters up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when she came up, I really didn't know how big it was, because it came up head first, dead, and gaffed and couldn't get it in the boat. I had a block and tackle and everything, and we just couldn't get it in the boat, and put it on the back of the transom and lifted up as high as we can, which was just at an eyeball, and the fish laid straight down. Well, it turned out to be that when we brought it in, fish was 16 feet 4 inches long with a 78-inch girth at the dorsal fin, and 9 feet away at the anal fin was 76 inches. Tail of 22.5 inches around. And we couldn't get, when we got to the Hawaii Yacht Club, put it on the dock, we couldn't believe how big it was. Couldn't get a certified scale until the next morning, so it sat for 16, we fought, it actually sat for 16.5 hours there until we got a certified scale, and she weighed out at 1,207.
So the final weight was 1,207 pounds.
Right.
So that would qualify you as in the grander club, right?
Yes. And it was a 5-to-1 club also, which meant 5 times the weight of line size. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was a real nice trophy. And it not only was a trophy, I cut it up and had probably 900 or so plus pounds of meat that went to good use of giving a lot of. I gave it all away and smoked a lot of it and gave that away, and it was very, very good meat. I guess from dragging it in the ocean for that many hours, the meat really firmed up, and it was just mm-hmm. like perfect grade A steak.
Right. Well, you are also IGA.
IGFA. International Game Fish Association representative.
You're a state rep for them, right?
Right.
So what does that involve?
That involves keeping everybody informed of fishing. See, an IGFA is nothing but a body to keep records.
okay,
and promote the good spirit of fishing.
Records on size records and what, size. What records of what information do you?
Well, like the biggest Pacific blue marlin is 1,376 pounds caught mm-hmm. by Bobby Brown up in the Big Island.
Mm-hmm.
And that still holds the world's record as of today. Biggest black marlin is 1,560 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And they're on and they're, you know, we have record books. And if anybody would like to become an IGFA member or get involved in the IGFA, they can always call me.
And by the way, what for someone to get in touch with you, I mean, you have lures, for example, the silver fox, which you caught this grander on, right? And then you got old blue and a couple others. But if they wanted to contact you,
mm-hmm.
where would they contact you?
Mm-hmm.
And how would they get
well,
in touch with you?
There's a couple of numbers, a Hawaii Yacht Club, 944-9666. I'm always there. My boat's there. Or my cell phone, 223-8210. My email, bentoscustomlures@gmail.com. And that's a way to do it, bentoscustomlures@gmail.com. And I'll be more than glad to answer any questions or what you'd like to know or get involved with the IGFA. We have a lot of programs. We have a great junior anglers program. That there's a lot of world records that kids have caught that are astounding.
Mm-hmm. So you catch a grander, and quite many people are envious of you, obviously. I know I'd never be in that group of folk because I don't go out anymore. But I know when I speak to people and I talk to them about it, and they go, "My God, I'd like to meet this guy." And I would encourage anybody that if they want to know a little history and know a little techniques. And the funny thing is, all fishermen, I have opinions and techniques that they have devised themselves or come up over the years, or something has been handed down, and it works. It's tried, proven, and works, right? And I think from what I've seen, folks, I went out with Al, myself and a friend, Kimberly Lowe, Dr. Kimberly Lowe, and you can get this full story on carolcox.com. As I told you, Al Bento got the blues, but follow this. Al was the type of fisherman, he's so sure of himself that over the years I've fished in many places. I've fished California, all over the U.S. and what have you, and done many things. But to see Al at his pace, when I go fishing or when younger guys go fishing, we're frantic and maybe we might even leave the lures on the shore. That's not going to happen with Al. It's one package deal. So he invites us out, and he tells us, "We're going to go down to Waianae, and we're going to pick up ahi, right?"
Yeah.
And he says, "They are pretty big. They're running about 150, 200 pounders." And I'm like, "Well, okay, another fish story." So we go, and we don't do it at a hurried pace. I mean, we leave, sun was up?
It's called sampan style. When you leave the harbor, you start trolling. When you come back to the harbor, you're still trolling.
Yeah.
None of this high speed.
High speed and everybody, you know, old man on the waters was definitely the picture, if you can imagine that. And so he tells us, "We're going to go down to Waianae and we'll pick up a ahi." And I'm thinking, okay, I've heard this before. We get down there, two or three runs around the... And voila,
mm-hmm.
bang, you get one big bite, and its final weight was 170 pounds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We also got that Ono, too.
And so what happens? You tell us, no excitement. I mean, I didn't see, the man didn't break a sweat. I didn't see any excitement. It was so methodic. that his approach to this, it was just unreal how it took place. And I've been on boats where you get in an albacore bite or something like that, and I mean, it's a madhouse. Well, with Al, what did you tell me? Hop up in the wheelhouse and kick the engines, go left, right, go left.
Well, if you noticed, I like to fish an ahi after the run stops.
Mm-hmm.
I like to fish an ahi in a circular method. What I do is I make a circle, and this goes for marlin too. You make a circle and you just tighten the circle, and mm-hmm. all of a sudden you have a fish swimming next to the side of your boat. What I think it does is it all fish have this GPS in their head, according to the sun, I guess, and moon.
Mm-hmm.
And what you do is by twisting them in a circle, either port or starboard circle, you scramble his GPS where he doesn't know where he's going.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore the fish gets confused, and I think it makes it a little easier to bring the fish in. It also depends on the seas. If the seas are very, very high, then you'd have to use other methods.
Well, we had pretty calm seas in a sense.
Yeah, we had calm seas, so we used a circular method, and that's why I was telling you to just keep on going around in that circle.
And it was, I was astounded how it happened. I would see you just reeling. Folks, there was no effort in this, but I'm backing down the boat mm-hmm. and then making the circle.
Mm-hmm.
And voila, color breaks the water, and
he's right there. I mean,
and
you know, keep the fish swimming.
He gaffs it by himself. That's how a 170-pound fish, and he gaffs it, no struggle, and then brings it in, and there we are.
I used to be crazy in those days.
But anyway, I tell that story and that because that's what repeats itself. There's many a fisherman out there that can do this, and we don't get to know. And there is a story to be told, many stories to be told. And
we have so many good fishermen around the Hawaiian Islands that are well qualified to be called professionals.
Mm-hmm.
And this is from a heritage that goes back from their fathers, my father, their fathers, and now we're passing it on to our kids or other kids.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've started tournaments before, but one of my favorite tournaments is a Keiki's fishing tournament, which we've had for quite a few years now. And we take out the little kids. And what makes me feel good is I'm taking out these three kids right now where their father was a kid that I taught way back when.
Wow.
And it's great to see that type of chain going on.
So you're involved at the Hawaii Yacht Club, too, and with a lot of the programs. Didn't you found some of the tournaments, and what were they?
Well, just to give you a few tournaments in the islands that I've fished, goes way back to, like, the Kona Gold Fishing Tournament in Kona, the Huggles Tournament, Women's Tournament, Wee Guys Tournament, Lahaina Jackpot. That was one of the first ones out there, other than the Kona Gold. Chuck Machado. I don't know if you guys remember the Pokai Bay Bonanza Tournament, the Hyatt Tournament, Hawaii International Allison Tournament, Manelli Bay Tournament, Hanapau Jackpot Tournament, Lanai Rendezvous. Ho'olea Fishing Tournament is one of the tournaments that I helped found, along with three or four other guys. Senorita's Fishing Tournament, which I started 29 years ago. Black and Blue, I've been to the Black and Blue Bisbee up in Catalina. I've been to the Black and Blue Bisbee in Cabo. Catalina Classic. And to end it all, the Hawaiian International Billfish Tournament, which this year is going to be their 50th year as a tournament, which is great.
So what happens is, I got a question for you. If you were to go out fishing today, what five things do you think is the most important thing a person that you include in your arsenal of fishing? What do you take with you?
Well, first of all,
now I want you to be truthful. Now, don't hold back.
First of all, when you go out fishing, just make sure that your boat is safe to go out before you even start. Make sure that everything is working properly. you have good communications, you have an EPIRB, just safety-wise, make sure that you're very safe before you go out.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you come down to it, get out there and have fun.
Mm-hmm.
Get out there and concentrate. Look for birds. You see, anybody can go on a boat and go and sleep and talk and have a beer here and there and stuff like that. But in order to really look for the fish, you have to concentrate. And I'm talking about concentrating on a 10-hour trip, concentrating 10 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes people forget that. Everybody depends on luck nowadays. Well, our fish are not that agreeable nowadays, where before we used to come in a half a day with a full box of fish. Nowadays we come in on a full day with one or two fish.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to really get out there and look for it and work for it. And it takes eyes. The more eyes you have looking for fish, the more chances you're going to have to catch fish.
So back to that package. So the safety, mm-hmm. and what about filing a plan, letting someone know at home your return trip and all. Is that important?
That's important. It depends how far you're going and how long you're going to stay. But most of the time, there are people around you that have knowledge of where you're going. You're going fishing for a day. Okay?
But you shouldn't assume that, right? What could you do to make sure that... I mean, I've been out on the water where I see a boat there, and they pick up and leave, and they don't know that I'm still there. What,
mm-hmm.
what should an individual do or a skipper do when he...
Well, I would say the best thing to do would have make sure you have your EPIRB and have it registered,
mm-hmm.
yeah, so that they know who the EPIRB belongs to, the phone numbers to contact, and... Your plan, it may change because of the fact that when you go out, you may go one way, like we did last week, and it was just too snarly and too rough to go that way, so we turned around and made a second plan. Well, people don't know you're going to make a second plan. So the thing about it is make sure your communications are good,
mm-hmm.
A good VHF radio, and, you know, a CB radio helps, too, because there's a lot of people on CB.
Mm-hmm.
So... good phone, because phones will work 15 miles or so in the island.
Direct line of sight.
In the island, yeah. So you just make sure that and you've notified somebody on shore that this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to go fishing, and I'm going to come back in roughly around 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock.
Right.
And so that somebody has that knowledge. But you'd be surprised the amount of fishermen in the ocean that are there to help. I mean, I can't remember how many boats I've towed in because of the fact of a call. We need help.
Mm-hmm.
And I think our fishermen here are all that way. They take care of each other out there. We all take care of each other out there. And someday, you know, you may tow somebody in, and someday you may need a tow. So that's
how
we
look at a
buddy-buddy system. Yeah.
And then I noticed in your arsenal you had sharpened hooks. You had well-lubricated and...
All your gear has to be
gear,
perfect.
And you had, mm-hmm. but I also noticed one thing that wasn't absent, always was prevalent there, and that was a Budweiser.
Well, I think I've supported Budweiser for 50 years now, so.
So, well, there's no good
fishing. I don't think there's a picture that was taken of me without a Budweiser can in my hand, but that was just for, you know. Stability.
Okay. But you rely on, when you're out fishing, you rely, what are some of the things, you mentioned birds, what are some of the other things that a fisherman would rely on, that you rely on to locate fish, other than a fish finder?
Basically, when you go out, from the friends that you have out there and the common knowledge of what fishermen talk to other fishermen,
mm-hmm.
you have a general idea of where fish are, where fish are biting. You know that if somebody goes to the banks and they spend all day on the banks and comes back with nothing or one fish, you know that the banks aren't working that well.
Mm-hmm.
And then you know that, you know, you hear guys down in Waianae, they caught two or three ahi or several marlin strikes. So you know there's fish in that area. Mm-hmm. And then you have your buoy system around here. We have, I guess, what, 51 or 52 buoys in the whole state.
The FADs, you mean?
FADs.
Fish aggravated devices.
They work a lot. Mm-hmm. Right now, our coastline over here is pretty slow. We just started picking up a few marlin recently, and so my, but the windward side from Kaneohe all the way to Haleiwa has been really hot mm-hmm. for the last month or so.
I see.
Even a couple of months. Mm-hmm. And so you look at that, but, you know, for us to get from the Honolulu side and fish the Kaneohe side, that's a long, long truck. That's a 2 or 3 day venture mm-hmm. for us. And even going there, it's usually a little rougher than it is on
this side here. So the gas prices, you think, are dictating also the nature of the fishing types and what people do now? Is it?
No doubt about it. I mean, you know, people right now that, well, basically, like I said, they have two jobs, and one of their jobs may be fishing. But the thing about it is they're not going to go out and burn fuel to scout.
Right.
Nowadays, they're going to go out and burn fuel when they know that there's fish in the general areas mm-hmm. or at the buoys, mm-hmm. where they can go to the buoy and drop bait and not have to burn fuel trolling. Mm-hmm. And that's becoming a real big thing nowadays is live bait and dead bait. You get to these FADs, they almost always have fish around mm-hmm. them. And in order to save on your fuel, mm-hmm. Guys will go out and they'll catch Opelo or a coolie. Mm-hmm. I find one of the best fishes to live bait is Aku. Aku has always been a strong live bait contender of mine because all fish eat Aku. All fish. Every fish there is in the ocean eats Aku. And you ask the Kona boys, you ask Maui boys, when you can catch Aku, you can catch any fish on Aku as a live bait, mm-hmm. even as a dead bait. Like when I fished in Australia, the Australian guys down there, they don't have Aku, they have Kava Kava. And they don't troll live. They troll all dead bait, dead and skip baits. Mm-hmm. And you'd be surprised. They really do a job on it. That's where I learned how to sew dead baits, both the undulating bait, which they use as kamakaba, and then they have scalies mm-hmm. or scads that they use for the swimming bait.
Sure.
And they make these baits, after they've tied them, swim just like it's alive.
So you fished Australia, New Zealand?
Fished all the ribbons. I fished Lizard Island. We're stationed at based at Lizard Island, but we fished all the ribbons. Mm-hmm. And that's where I got my second grander down there. And
so you've caught two 1,000-pound
yeah,
and above marlin.
But down there, you get them and you take pictures of them and
maybe
you release
it.
All the fish. We caught 15 fish in 10 days. Mm-hmm. And two of them were over a grand, and I think the smallest black we had on was about 700, 750.
I see.
And all of them were released, which is great. Mm-hmm. I think the release program has done a lot for fishing. But then, you know, we hear these stories, and you're probably more into it than I am, but I hear a lot of these stories where these boats, after we've tagged and released all these fish, they're waiting right on the perimeter of our borders.
Right.
And then harvest all the fish that we get.
Well, I'm following a story right now where there's a Peruvian vessel implicated, and I don't have all the facts, but I will be just following up and discussing that. Some of the tagged fish here have been caught by and shown up in some South American canneries. Mm-hmm. But anyway, we're going to take a break, but this is the Carol Cox Show, and some of you might be interested in knowing that was Jackie Wilson that sang the earlier song. And if you are interested, it's Jackie Wilson, and
the CD is called Mr. Excitement. I forgot to tell the caller that it's a greatest hit CD, so there's more than one CD in the
right.
the compilation.
Right, but it's good soul music. It's soulful sound, right?
Yeah.
But anyway, I just thought I'd share that with. Sometimes I get in those moods, and because I'm living in such a beautiful place, there's great people. I meet people like Al, and I can't get rid of my past. because that's a part of me as well. But so I mix it up, and I'm going to share that with you. But anyway, I'm going to just thought I'd just share another song. We're going to take a minute break or so, and we'll be right back with Al Bento. Thank you.
Now you can get great bargains and help save our landfill at the same time, only at the Green Bed Factory. The Green Bed Factory is Hawaii's only recycled bed company. Quality mattresses and box springs are stripped, cleaned, sanitized, and completely rebuilt using all new fabric and padding. Local labor and local materials means a local product. Save shipping costs and, of course, save money. Visit our website at thegreenbedfactory.com or stop by our showroom at Ross's Appliances and Furniture. Ross's and the Green Bed Factory will save you hundreds of dollars, and we guarantee it.
Welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. I'm sitting here with my friend Al Bento, and this is KWAI. You can pick us up on web podcasts at carolcox.com, CARROLL Cox.com. And we have posted up there a full story with Al and some of the techniques and all the other information. But a couple things. If you're interested in acquiring or buying one of Al's or two of Al's or three of Al's lures, handcrafted and handmade, and surely there are other people out there that have lures. But I've been out there with Al, and he took me out and showed me the Silver Fox and the Old Blue. That worked, so there's no doubt about it. And so, anyway, Al, you've done quite a few things. You've done seminars. Quickly, what were the seminars you've done?
Back in 1980, at the Hawaii Yacht Club, I was a rear commodore for power, and I wanted to teach the sailboat guys how to catch fish off of a sailboat going very slow. They said they couldn't do it and things. Well, anyway, at the first seminar that I put on, along with Mike Christie, he and I put on this seminar, and we had 106 people there, and most of them were sailboat people. And as of today, our sailboat fleet has caught more fish than you can shake a stick at. I've also given seminars at Pearl Harbor, at the different clubs, and I've done probably about 30 or 40 seminars. And all we teach is the basics on what to do, how to set your lines, how to what kind of lures to run, where to store your gear, how to store your gear, how to keep your fish, how to bleed your fish and keep your fish, and how to cook your fish too, mm-hmm. or marinate them.
And you, I notice everybody around the yacht club there when Uncle Al shows up upstairs with a big pan of ceviche, and you have a ceviche recipe. Real quick, can you share with the folks out there how you make that recipe, what that recipe, if you don't want to?
Well, my mother told me that if I shared it, I'd have to bring her back, and I'd love that.
Well,
but anyway,
tell them how good it is, then. If
you can do it with any white meat fish. This is
right.
Not like the Tahitian. Tahitians is post on crew with the coconut milk. Mm-hmm. Mine is just a basic recipe of lime, vinegar, oil, peppers to your taste, mm-hmm. onions, and Japanese cucumbers.
I see.
And marinate it. And you can eat it right after you make it, but it's best maybe 3 or 4 hours after you make it. And it's good for a week or 2 weeks in the refrigerator.
And you can tell how good it is to see how many guys stand around there dipping and knocking elbows.
I'm from a Portuguese background, so, you know, the vinegar and stuff is a lot in our cooking, mm-hmm. just like the Filipinos.
Yeah, well, you know, again, folks, if you are interested in some of you guys out there, like me, I thought I knew everything about fishing, and once I met Al, it's like, well, you really don't know much of anything, especially techniques, and just when you go out, it's not about catching all the time. It's about sometimes just enjoying having fun and being safe. But if you want to acquire Al's lures, you can go to send him an email at Bento's Custom Lures, BentosCustomLures lures@gmail.com, or 223-8210-808 area code, and you can give them a call and set up something. But you also have occasionally take out people on just a fishing clinic. They can join you and go out and look, mm-hmm. and see, right? You're not so secretive about your techniques.
No, I'm not. I'm at an age right now where I'd rather teach then hold it all in, and I've learned so much from so many different people in my life that it's, I've been doing this for quite a few years now. Just anybody who wanted to learn more, I'm there to help.
Well, good. I can just see the aloha. Most people, I've gone places, they're very secretive, don't want to talk, but you, on the other hand, you're willing to show, and you don't hide your hooks, and you don't have any little idiosyncrasies that you don't wish to share. But I appreciate that, and I appreciate you taking me out and sharing with me and all of the stories. And again, thank you for joining in with us.
Thank you, Carol.
And thank you, Al. This is the Carol Cox Show, and we'll see you next week. And just a reminder, we have Nalani Oles on the 30th of this month coming in and talking with us. So I hope you gather around and join us. Calvin Griffin will be on with the Hawaii Bulletin Board following. And thank you again. Aloha.
This is KWAI, Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.